Crime Alert, I'm Nancy Grace, breaking crime news now. As the judge works to keep the Sean Combs trial on a tight schedule, the prosecution cuts witnesses from their list after Jane, not her real name's, eye-opening testimony last week, the defense repeatedly asking for a mistrial, only to be denied. So now Combs' attorneys will make their case. Nicole Parton joins us for more on what's happening in the Sean Combs courtroom drama.
Nancy, Brendan Paul, a former assistant to Sean Diddy Combs, took the stand and shared that he aided Combs in preparing for his extravagant, drug-fueled parties, but he refuted the label of being a drug mule. Initially employed to support Combs with his fitness regimen, Paul admitted to occasionally purchasing drugs for the music mogul, but he emphasized that this was a minor aspect of his overall responsibilities. He described his role as demanding long hours and a high level of commitment. On Friday, jurors also heard from the final witness for the prosecution, a special agent from Homeland Security Investigations, and were presented with text message exchanges between Combs and his former partner, Cassie Ventura. Both the prosecution and Combs' legal team are anticipating to conclude their arguments by the middle of the week, with jurors potentially starting their deliberations as early as Wednesday. Combs is facing serious allegations, including sex trafficking, facilitating prostitution, and conspiracy to commit racketeering. Federal officials claim he has threatened, mistreated, and coerced victims to satisfy his sexual needs from 2004 to 2024. Special Agent Joseph Cirillo presented evidence, including a chart organized by the prosecution, detailing various communications, travel records, and hotel expenses linked to the case. Further testimony from Cirillo is expected on Monday, after which the prosecution plans to rest its case. The defense will then have the opportunity to present its arguments. Nancy, deliberations by the jury could begin as soon as Wednesday.
Thanks, Nicole. More crime and justice news after this.
Following a shooting incident during a Sunday service in Michigan, a deacon and a security guard intervened to neutralize the threat. On June 22, an active shooter was reported at Cross Point Community Church, located in Wayne, a suburb of Detroit, as confirmed by a representative from the Wayne Police Department. A security guard managed to fatally shoot the assailant before law enforcement arrived. According to the church's senior pastor, Bobby Kelly Jr., the security guard had the opportunity to take aim at the shooter as a 31-year-old white male, thanks to the deacon who ran over him with a vehicle. The attacker was struck by one of our members who witnessed the chaos unfolding as he was arriving for church, Pastor Kelly recounted to the Detroit News. The deacon used his Ford F-150 truck to collide with the shooter, this as reported by the news outlet. Only one person, identified by Detroit News as the security guard, sustained injuries during the incident. The shooter discharged several rounds into the church but did not enter the building, which was reportedly filled with about 150 attendees, including more children than usual, according to the pastor. Live footage from the service captured the moment the congregation became aware of the danger. "Get down," someone shouted, prompting people to rush to safety. "Everyone to the back, please, everyone come to the back," directed another church leader as they guided the congregation toward the rear of the building. In the aftermath of the incident, Pastor Kelly stated that members of Cross Point Community Church are rallying together for support, and the children present during the attack are doing well. Looking ahead, he mentioned, "We will convey our leadership to develop a structured plan for moving forward." The pastor also noted that the shooter did not seem to have any affiliation with the church. The investigation into the shooting is still in progress, with multiple agencies involved, according to a spokesperson from the WPD, who indicated that additional information would be released later this week. Jennifer Kessie seemed to have the perfect life, surrounded by family, friends, a fulfilling career, and a caring boyfriend, until her mysterious disappearance in 2006. At just 24 years old, Kessie had recently graduated from the University of Central Florida and secured a promising job at a timeshare company. She had even bought her first home, a condo in Orlando, Florida. which would ultimately be remembered as her last known whereabouts. On the morning of January 24, 2006, just a few days after returning from a trip to St. Croix with her boyfriend, Rob Allen, Kessie failed to arrive at work. Her colleagues recognized this as an unusual behavior, reached out to her parents, Drew and Joyce, out of concern. Unable to reach their daughter, they rushed to her condo to investigate. Upon arriving at the complex, they quickly realized their daughter was missing. Her car was not there. Her condo appeared to be in its usual state as she left in a hurry for work, a damp towel in the bathroom, pajamas strewn on the floor, her hair tools scattered on the counter. The only items missing were her keys, cell phone, purse, and iPod, none of which have ever been located. Meanwhile, her car was found abandoned about a mile away, parked outside another apartment complex on the same day she vanished. For the past 19 years, Jennifer's family and a dedicated team of investigators have tirelessly searched for clues in hopes of finding her, often facing dead ends. Despite the absence of concrete suspects and only grainy surveillance footage of a possible person of interest, they remain resolute in their quest to uncover the truth. Just prior to her disappearance, Jennifer and Rob had enjoyed their vacation in St. Croix. They returned to Florida on January 22, 2006, with Jennifer going back to her condo while Rob made his way home to Fort Lauderdale, roughly 3 hours away. Jen was beaming with happiness after the trip, Joyce shared with 48 Hours, recalling a phone call with her daughter shortly after her return from vacation. The next day, Jennifer resumed her work routine. After leaving the office, she spoke with her parents and later chatted with her boyfriend, Rob. Their conversation ended around 10 p.m., marking the last time he would ever hear her voice. On the morning of January 24, Rob noticed he hadn't received his usual message from Jennifer, which struck him as odd. On the Nancy Grace Show, he recounted how he called her on the way to work, but it went straight to voicemail. In the meantime, her employer realized she didn't show up for work and didn't notify anyone, which was out of character. A concerned coworker reached out to her parents, Drew and Joyce. They drove to the condo. When we got there, everything seemed okay. We rushed in. It looked like a normal day for my daughter, Joyce said. The only items missing from the apartment, her purse, keys, cell phone, and iPod. She definitely spent the night in her condo, her mother said. It's like she got up and got ready for work, just a normal day. On the day her car was discovered, her family knew something was wrong. Security footage indicated it had been parked there since noon on the day of her disappearance. However, no forensic evidence was found inside the car, leading investigators to believe it had been cleaned. If you have any information regarding missing Jennifer Kessie, please contact 1-800-423-TIPS.
For the latest crime and justice news, go to crimeonline.com. And please join us for our daily podcast, Crime Stories, where we do our best to find missing people, especially children, and help solve unsolved homicides. With this crime alert, I'm Nancy Grace. This is an iHeart podcast, guaranteed human.